attached to what the results are, and we become attached to what our circumstances are and so many other ideas. And as soon as we realize we're just an instrument, and if we just try the best we can, and we try to develop our desire by doing things as nicely as we can, then the result is that Krishna will reciprocate. Krishna is always reciprocating. He's reciprocating if we desire that Krishna sends his demons, subconsciously or consciously. And he reciprocates if we want to spread the Sankirtan movement by sending his people to take the books. And when he doesn't send his people, even if we're desiring, it's simply to build up our desire even more, even stronger. So he can reciprocate even more. And when he does reciprocate, then we shouldn't become complacent, thinking now I got what I wanted. No, we should think now I'm simply doing what Krishna wanted. And because of that, things went very nicely. So now I should even desire more what Krishna wants, and things will even go nicer. And our goal is not even to become, you know, to get out of our material problems, miseries, or whatever else. Our goal is to become a devotee of Krishna. And then when we're a devotee of Krishna, then we'll even become more anxious, like Prabhupada was, to spread Krishna consciousness even more. Atmo pamyena sarvatra samam pashati arjuna sukham vai yadukham sa yogi paramo mataha. That he's a true yogi who can see the true equality of all living beings, both in their happiness and distress. And we'll realize that these people walking by, they could be me. It's not that I'm something special, or only the devotees who are now in the Krishna consciousness movement are something special. But all these people have the potential of becoming special also, if we just make a little effort. Maybe it's by Krishna will just send people, you know, who's already lined up according to our desire to take books, and he'll just send those people. But Krishna also reciprocates. If we develop enough intensity of desire, then we'll be able to see that practically everyone will be able to take a book. Of course, my suggestion is, one time I was at the airport doing a marathon, and one of the DVCs came by to watch us. So his advice to us was at O'Hara to go up to everyone and try and give them a book. So when he was there for around 15-20 minutes, we tried it. And then when he left, we went back to our regular understanding of how to do things, because no one could, you know, no one's going to last for years doing that, or even for days. Then we went back to try to find out the people who are potentially most likely to take books. And then when we distribute books to them, the people who are most likely to take books, then what happens? You become enlivened. And then your vision changes. Then you start developing more and more confidence that, you know, this other person could also take a book. And then when you become enlivened enough, and we actually have the faith, and practically you start thinking practically anyone, and you have the confidence. But if you do it artificially, then people will simply get annoyed, usually. If you try and approach everyone, then they'll just, instead of becoming taking a book, they'll just discourage you from giving out more books. Therefore, one has to use one's intelligence and always judge where our consciousness is at, and whether or not we're actually doing, getting a positive result, or whether Krishna is now putting us into some kind of situation so we can develop more humility and pray for him. We always have to try and understand what the circumstances are, and so we can go positively ahead in the long run. Not that we just want to be a servant of Krishna for some years, and then we'll do something else. Actually, we want to be servants of Krishna forever. Doesn't mean we'll necessarily distribute books on the street forever, but we can try to see how to do things for the long run, long term. How much, we have to take everything into account as much as possible. And especially for the brahmacharis, or anyone, even householders, one has to be very careful about associating with who we're giving books to, that we don't take it as some kind of opportunity for sense gratification. One time I was distributing books with one of the biggest distributors in the world at that time, in an airport, just himself and myself. And his idea is to approach the most beautiful women in the airport. And he's quite an attractive person. So every time he handed someone a book, I watched him sometimes, and it was just like a romance going on in the middle of the airport. So he sold them all books, but you know, finally he found the one he was looking for, and he disappeared. So that's not a very good idea. To take, you know, advantage. Now I've stopped this, you know, beautiful young girl, and see how powerful I am. She surrendered to me, and this other one will surrender to me too, and I'm becoming more and more powerful. So that's very dangerous. So one has to realize that they're all Krishna's servants, they're not their body, and one should not simply, one has to treat them all very respectfully, especially dealing with women. I saw that with probably the biggest Bhakti Shrutis in the world. As soon as I got into a little mentality like that, they were gone. Well, at least for a while. Actually, they were gone from Bhakti Shrutis. That was the end of it. So one has to be very careful of that enjoying mentality. Of course, it is enjoying, but not that enjoying mentality. We should enjoy Bhakti Shrutis, but we should make sure that we're seeing everyone as a spiritual soul. Doesn't mean we're going to see this tiny soul, but we have to at least understand that this person is the same as I am. They may have this body or that body, whatever body, but actually they're a spiritual soul just like I am. Now what I'm seeing is the modes of nature that I've acquired, not the person. And therefore we have to deal with them properly so that our consciousness doesn't become affected by their association. Instead, that we're actually becoming, we're doing it at least as dutifully as a matter of duty. And then above that, that duty will turn into great enthusiasm and enlivenment. And then to keep that same respectful attitude at the same time, that same knowledge based upon the scriptures. And then it will increase. We won't fall into Maya. We won't fall into a lower platform of dealing with people. We'll be able to keep it on the spiritual platform. And then when we come back to the temple, when we associate with the devotees, come back to the van, not that now I've become a very powerful person and everyone should respect me. Now I've become something more than that's an ordinary devotee. Now I've become a super devotee. And anyone who gets my association is somehow or another gets blessed that I'm, you know, disguised as a mild-mannered devotee, but actually I'm super devotee. No, one has to keep that humble attitude, realizing that simply Krishna is giving me an opportunity to realize how nice everyone actually is. And the first persons I'll realize how nice they are is the devotees. So if I, Sankirtan should help us develop an attitude of service to the other devotees. And as soon as we lose our service attitude towards the other devotees, then we'll lose our enthusiasm to make other people devotees. If my relationships are not very sweet with the devotees, why will I want to make more people devotees? If I can have, you know, the same relation with them too? No, we have to cultivate a very nice relation with devotees, but all based upon the fact that I'm a servant of my spiritual master, and through him, I'm realizing I'm a servant of the servant of Krishna, and therefore in all my dealings, I should always be very conscious of that. Not that there's any position or place in this universe or in the spiritual universe where I become something other than Krishna's servant. And that way, we'll be able to make progress and experience what Krishna consciousness actually is. So thank you. Any questions? Yes.
When you say that should be humble, then how can you be convinced the people if you not think?
No, we shouldn't humble. What do you mean by humble?
Like,
excuse me, sir, could you please take a book? I'm so
humble. Humble saying that you don't feel qualified.
No, we're not artificial. That's all artificial. That's the Haji is trying to think like that. If you actually become qualified, then you'll feel disqualified. If you actually become qualified, then you'll see how Krishna is doing it. There's a time and place for everything. Wasn't it that Arjuna was puffed up? You know, I'm going to kill all so many people. I'm a killer. Watch out for me, boy. Do you think Arjuna was humble, or do you think Arjuna was humble?
No, he was humble, but not in the sense that he thought he could not do it. He knew.
Yeah, that's not humility. That's foolishness. That's Maya. We're not. First of all, he couldn't do it. We're not the doer. We're the desirer. If we desire strongly to serve our spiritual master in Krishna, to serve the disciples of Sakshin Krishna, if they're there, they will automatically become humble because they'll realize how great they are. And because they're there and we're acting as their instrument, they'll be able to do wonderful things because they have unlimited potency. But they won't be able to see that we're not the doer. If we think we're the doer, now I have to be the doer and be humble at the same time. It's not possible. Because we'll be in Maya. There's no question of being humble in Maya. I'm humbly in Maya. No, we have to be Krishna conscious. We have to be servants of the servants of the servants going all the way back to Krishna. And if Krishna and his devotees are there, spiritual energies, they automatically will be humble. We'll see we're insignificant. We have no such potency to be able to do such wonderful things. We're just a little tiny soul. But when we see how they're utilizing everything we have in their service, and they're able to do wonderful things, then automatically we feel overwhelmed by awe for the whole thing. And as soon as we take credit for it, then immediately we'll be in Maya and we'll be able to do very much more.
It's related to this point. I had the experience that, for example, every day when you go out in book distribution, you feel, in the beginning, you feel a little insecure, like the first person you approach. It's still because you have the experience that when you just try to keep your consciousness fixed on Krishna, and although it's a little difficult in the beginning, you have faith that, you know, the results will also come. I mean, like the day before and last week and the month before. Personally, I've never had the experience that when I did my best and I tried to keep the consciousness real focused on Krishna, that at the end of the day I would not be happy with what happened. You know, there was never a day when I struggled whole day and there was no results. So in that sense I felt a little insecure but confident at the same time that the Lord will make it happen again today, because He did every day. So in that sense you can be a little humble because you know it's not you who are doing it, but because you have faith that because Krishna did it every day, that today it will happen again. So you are, in one sense, you feel very confident that it will happen. On the other hand, you feel humble because you know it's not because of us it's going to happen. In that sense, I feel like a realization that which it's not that you are proud that, oh, I'm going to make it happen. It will happen because it happens every day by the Lord's grace.
One who has conquered his mind and super souls are in reach, but he has attained tranquility. Such a person, happiness and distress, honor and dishonor, heat and cold are all the same. If we surrender to Krishna, then he'll surrender to Krishna means we just let him do it. Hari Namananda once said after the marathon, he said, yeah, that, you know, we just don't get in the way. The only thing we can do is get in the way. If we don't get in the way, everything will be alright. And as soon as we get the wrong conception, not getting in the way means we just see things properly. And just like, leave it up to Krishna, let him do it. But leaving it up to him and he do it means that he's going to supply the intelligence and we have to accept it. And then we can watch as it all happens. We have to make the endeavor, the effort, by just letting him be more or less willing, desiring, and accepting. And then he'll give all the intelligence and he'll arrange everything so it all happens. Oh yes, and then you can talk again. I have to go on. Yes.
How is it that that often it's also possible that actually out of false ego, for example, a competitive spirit, that's also many books can be disagreed.
That's the way the whole world works. Desire. So, desiring competitive spirit in the Sankirtan world is not an ordinary competitive spirit, because Krishna is in the center. Just like the fight between the devotees is not an ordinary fight, because Krishna is in the center. So if Krishna is there, everything's alright. Not everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'd rather, you know, just I'm sure all of us who distribute books have the experience. You know, you're distributing books, you can't do very much. You're next to someone who's distributing so many books. So, call what you like, envy or appreciation or whatever you want to call it. Then immediately you start thinking, well, why is he distributing so many books? Anyone's desire increases automatically to distribute books. I mean, I remember I was distributing books in the airport, and Pragosh, who's so, you know, he was the best distributor in the world at that time, Bradley, and he was so competitive. Every, you know, hour he'd come up to us and ask us how much we did. And if we were ahead of him, he'd just like... out there, you know, stop someone and, you know, get a $100 donation or something from it. You know, he couldn't lose. Because the desire was just so intense. Now, whether that is always so good or not, you know, whether that's the only factor. I mean, it's a major factor. We want to distribute a lot of books. Mm-hmm. But there is a factor. The quality of our book distribution shouldn't be, you know, we shouldn't think that that's the only, you know, standard to, the only criteria to judge whether my book distribution is successful or not. We should also see whether or not we're enlightened and enlivened, whether or not the people who are walking away are actually appreciating what we're doing. They're actually going to take the book too. We have to be a little perceptive. So we may have a desire, a competitive desire to do more books than everyone else. So that's good. But we have to be a little discerning too, that the desire also is we don't diminish our quality of our book distribution. But that's good. That's what association means in the material world. It works according to desire too. People are competitive and therefore they're able to spread more Maya through their competition. Businessmen are competing with each other to send the world to hell as quickly as possible. Nations are competing with each other. Who's going to? So that's all going on desires. It's building on each other's desires. So we're also building on each other's desires. But the result should be Krishna consciousness. And probably he wanted the books out by you know, somehow or another get the books out. So that desire usually purifies us. And we can actually see how we're just the instrument. And that even if I'm distributing books, it's not that I'm distributing the book. And even if the book goes out, now it's by the mercy of this other devotee who's distributing more books than I do. He developed a desire within me by his example. So that we should see that we're just doing it as a service to him. That it went out just because I appreciated the service. And therefore my desire increased to do the same thing. Go now. So you can ask questions on this? Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Nothing to do with me. All by the mercy of both tonight, if you and the other devotees. See what you come
in. Someone who has. Yeah, Nelson Aramba also. Thank you for your. Thank you.
He's not gone yet. He just said that.
He said. You're not down yet. You just said it.
But what we see, for example, in Belgium, and especially also in France, this anti-sect cult, they have a lot of power and try to diminish the movement stop the movement. So, should we really seriously work on that, on a PR, do an all endeavor across the people from the parliament?
Well, there will be opposition. There already is. There always was. Even in the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there was opposition to the Sankirtan party. And the Chankazi, he did his best to stop the Sankirtan movement. But Lord Chaitanya converted him. And then Chankazi issued an edict, a warning, that for all the future generations of Kazis in my family, that no one should ever try to impose any restriction on the Sankirtan movement. So there was opposition, but it was turned around. So, and that will always repeat. It's like Maharaj was talking about how people have clickers and they make announcements, and then there are lawsuits, and then there's the brainwashing, Ted Patrick, deprogrammers, and the Sankirtan movement survived. And even if there's a world war, the Sankirtan movement will survive. And that's what Srila Prabhupada himself said, that it will simply go on increasing because it's eternal. And it cannot be stopped. And it's a pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so it will go on. And it's what the Guru Parampara, all the spiritual masters in our line, have desired. And you cannot oppose that and be successful. It's like Krishna. There were so many demons that came to disturb the tranquility of Vrindavan when Krishna was there. They were able to enter Vrindavan. They were demons. Even though Krishna was present, they could get in, but they couldn't defeat him. Krishna is known as Ajita. He is unconquerable, invincible. And the Sankirtan movement, similarly, is a pastime of the Lord. And it cannot be defeated. There may be some setbacks, but they're not permanent. And the preaching goes on anyway. If it can't go on this way, it goes on that way. But it goes on. And there may be some government prohibition from time to time. I was in Geneva, and we used to chant at it's called Place Molao, the main central square. And we used to chant there all day. And finally, people working in that area complained to the authorities about these devotees. They're making so much racket, so much noise with their madongas and kartals. And the police said, you can't use those instruments anymore. So what did we do? What do you think we did? We did kirtan without instruments. We just clapped our hands and chanted Hare Krishna. So it went on. And then they said, we don't want you coming onto the street wearing your dhotis.
What?
So what do you think we did? So we couldn't go on the street, so we went door to door. We go to different buildings, and we go into the basement, and we put on our dhotis, and then we leave our other clothes in the basement and go up and down door to door doing sankirtan. But we didn't have any books. So what do you think we did? We have one book in English, and we go door to door and say, can you give a donation so we can print this in French? And that was our sankirtan. And anyone who would give a donation later on, we sent them a book when we printed it in French. So it would go on no matter what obstacle. That's how I say there is no obstacle. The preaching can go on. If you can't do it publicly, do it privately. You do it in people's homes, and it becomes a grassroots movement. And we had so much opposition, we were declared in Switzerland undesirable. And the police said, we want you to get into your car and drive out of the country, and we're going to follow you. And they followed us right out of the Switzerland, right across the border. And then we took a train back into the country. So if you can't go in by car, you go in by train. And then we started going to the universities. And we got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of signatures of people who said that we had the right to do sankirtan in the city. And we gave that to the authorities. And they said, okay, you proved the point. You have the support. Just do it. Just keep moving. They said, don't stay. Because what was happening was we were playing our instruments at this one place, and all the people working in the offices, right, they couldn't do their work. So they had to go on a midnight shift. And they'd come to work at midnight and work until 8, and then they'd leave and we'd come. They couldn't work while we were there chanting. So they made an adjustment for us, but it was just too much. So finally we were declared undesirable. Now the person who really helped us with the government, this is a great story. When I first went to Switzerland, I went there to open the center in Geneva. I had I had no money at all. I had, however, a copy of a record. It was called Radhakrishna Temple album, and it was made with George Harrison. So I had one copy, which I took to the radio station, and I said when I arrived there, dirty, shaved head, that maybe you'd like to buy this record and play it, play some cuts from this record on the air. And the receptionist said, wait here 1 minute, I'm going to get Mr. Allendach. So she went and brought this man to the reception area, His name was Jean-Pierre Allenbach, and he was one of the broadcasters. And he saw me there, and he said, "What is this record you have?" I said, "Well, we made it with the Beatles." He said, "Really?" He said, "You speak French?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, you know what? I got 30 minutes, and I have no program. I got nothing for my 30 minutes. You are the program. I'm going to ask you questions, and you can tell everybody about your Hare Krishna movement." So from that one record, I got to meet Jean-Pierre Allenbach, and we did a 30-minute broadcast, and he was playing songs, the Hare Krishna mantra, and all these other songs from our record, and some Beatles songs. It was a great show, you know,
yeah.
30 minutes. So years later, when we had this problem, a couple years later, Jean-Pierre Allenbach, he presented our petition to the government and said, "Let these guys chant. They're good guys. They're devotees of Krishna. We should give them a chance. Give them another chance." Wow. And that's how we got back in. So it was an obstacle, but the seed was planted, and the obstacle was overcome. And that'll happen again and again. It's going to happen in France too. It could happen here. It could happen anywhere. But it happened in the States. I mean, we used to get arrested. I can't tell you how many times I've been arrested, put in jail, fingerprinted, handcuffed, dragged through the streets. You know, we were even doing a play on the streets of Paris. And it was Lord Nityananda's appearance day. I was Lord Nityananda. Indrajitna Swami was Lord Chaitanya. And we all got arrested. They arrested the lords. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda. And then some radio reporter said, she came up, she said, what's happening here? Who are you? Who are you anyway? I said, "I'm Nityananda, this is Lord Chaitanya." She said, "How old are you?" I said, "Well, 500 years old." I was really in character. But even under those circumstances, we're being hauled off to jail. We're getting all this publicity, all free publicity, to broadcast the glories of the Sankirtan movement. So, you know, don't let any obstacle stop you. The movement for spreading Krishna consciousness is unstoppable. We just have to have that faith. And even if there are some setbacks, they're temporary. And even if it seems to be insurmountable, there's no insurmountable obstacle in the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we know that from the pastimes of the Chankasi. And Prabhupada says in the purports of the Chaitanya Charitamrita that this is the proof of the purity of our movement, is that there will be obstacles. So it's actually a good sign, not a bad sign. And they will come, and Prabhupada said, the demons, he said, in this universe, in the mature world, there are the devotees and the demons. And the demons will always tease the devotees. So they're just teasing you. They actually have no power over us. We're protected. Just like Prahlad Maharaj, his father was the greatest obstacle of all time in the history of the universe. But Prahlad Maharaj prevailed. And why is that? Because his power came from the same source as Hiranyakashipu's power. But because he was a devotee and always remembering Krishna, then therefore he had the special protection which came from Lord Nrisimhadeva. Even when he was about to be killed, in so many ways his father was trying to get rid of him because he was always talking about Krishna. And we don't want to hear about this anymore. We want to, if Vishnu is in this pillar, let him come out and I'll cut off his head. So that's what they're thinking. We're going to cut off the head of this Hare Krishna movement, but you'll see Lord Nrisimhadeva will appear in every case, in every instance. So we really don't have to fear, but we have to be innovative. And when there are obstacles, we have to see how we can overcome it, how we can bypass it. And Krishna will always send someone to help us. Always. I had the same problem when I went to open the temple in Tel Aviv in Israel, that there were so many people, demoniac people, they were trying to put cigarettes out of my face, or what are we doing, Sankirtan? And then they came to the temple, some demons wanted to set the place on fire, they put lit newspaper soaked in kerosene under the door into the temple and tried to burn us out. So, you know, these things happen, but you know, we just keep doing what we're doing. We keep chanting Hare Krishna, and Krishna always protect us. And you know, every situation will turn around. It depends on our faith. We've got to keep that faith strong. That's why we need association, because you know, I know if I was by myself, I would have run away from that situation a long time ago. Mm-hmm. whether it was Switzerland or France or Israel, anywhere, it's a challenge. Krishna knows that you're his devotee, but he wants to test your faith. He wants to test how much love you have for him. And this is our chance to show how strong it is. Just like the Beatles, they became attracted when they saw the devotees in London going out on a street on, what's that street? Oxford Street? The main street? And every day, rain, shine, hail, sleet, snow, any conditions, and the devotees kept going out. And when they saw that, they said, these guys are serious. This is the real deal. And that's Prabhupada too. He would convince us by showing how he himself, even at an advanced age in the 70s, was following that highest standard. There was no obstacle to his devotional service. Do
you think that sometimes we hear devotees, they ask, yeah, in those days Maya wasn't so strong, or this or that, and Maya is now more tricky or more prominent. So that's why we don't distribute as many literature as we did in the past. Can you say something about that?
I don't think it has to do with Maya being strong and weak. Maya is one of the energies of Krishna, and is therefore very powerful and very difficult to overcome. Maya jakshena prakriti suyate sacharachi. Very difficult to overcome at any stage of life. I don't think that's it. I think that these are different times, but our process is the same. And I think that our focus may have changed, so we're not so much interested in quantity as we are interested in quality. And quantity will also be there, but I think we're more interested in presenting a more complete picture to people rather than just trying to push them into a quick sale, which it may have been very worthwhile in those days. Prabhupada wanted us to gather as many books as possible. So, and why? So that he could print all the books and they could be in print at the same time. So we needed a huge turnover of literature. Plus Prabhupada needed money to build the temples in India. So Prabhupada said, now we are spending in India, but later we will spend everywhere. So now we have. Prabhupada said if we had four projects like this in Europe, that Europe would become Krishna conscious. Four projects like Radhadesh. So this was a very important project. New Mayapur, a very important project. And the only way we were able to do that, because Prabhupada said our whole movement, our whole society, can be supported by book distribution. So we had to have the quantity of sales. And but at the same time, we may have gone a little bit overboard, a little bit, by not preaching more and cultivating people more and creating more interest in our books and giving them a chance to get in touch with us again and the follow-up contacts, Sankirtan approach, so that people may not have been reading the books, but they were paying for the books. And maybe we should have done it a little differently, but ultimately it'll all work out. It'll balance out. There's never any fault in distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. You can never find fault in someone who's doing that, but you can always improve in your technique, strategy. Prabhupada said every book distributor has his own strategy. And whatever works, that should be the strategy that we adopt. And of course the quantity is important, but we want quality too. Prabhupada used to say mass and class. Mass and class. So you don't do it, but with some discretion, not to say something dishonest, for example. Prabhupada said, I never attracted anyone to this movement by saying something that was untrue. So, you know, we should be honest. Brahmins should, especially Brahmins. Vaishyas, they may sometimes say something. For you, I'm not making any profit when I sell you this piece of clothing. But, you know, he has to make a little profit, otherwise he's going out of business. But he says that, and it's permissible because he's in business. But for a Brahman has to be very truthful, very straightforward. And because we're giving Krishna, we're dealing, when Prabhupada said, you have to be very careful because you're dealing with Radha and Krishna. So we have to be very careful to be honest, straightforward. Those are qualities of the devotee. And we don't want to compromise in those qualities just to increase the quantity of books. So I think everything is there in what Prabhupada taught. I would do it. I would do it nicely. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Always gives me so much happiness to be with Sanktam Men, because it's total dedication. There's nothing else on your mind. Just get the books out, enlighten people, enlighten the society, do the service, become an instrument. That's full surrender.
You were saying before that the devotee reflects the existence of Krishna, and the devotee becomes a touchstone.
Yeah.
So could you speak a little bit more about that? What is required for us to become touchstones or representatives of Krishna? Hmm.
Yeah, well, Prabhupada gave the example of electricity, which you may not be able to see, but when the light is turned on, you could see proof that there is electricity. And he said, in the same way, when you see a devotee, you may not see God, but you see proof of God's existence when you see the devotee. With the Lord, he must have his servants, otherwise what is he the Lord of? So we are the servants, and Krishna is the Lord, and that we are serving him is proof that he's there. Not that we have to see him to serve him, but we're convinced by transcendental knowledge, by hearing about him, that he is there, that he exists. And the reciprocation we also begin to feel as we become purified in the process. When Rukmini was hearing about Krishna from Narada Muni, she became so attracted to Krishna that she couldn't consider marrying anyone else, but she had never seen him. Mm-hmm. Right? So you become convinced by hearing. It's you gotta go. It's the most powerful agent, the transmission of the transcendental knowledge through sound vibration. So, how do you become a touchstone? Well, a touchstone is something that when you touch it to a metal object, that object turns to gold. And a devotee acts as a touchstone if whoever comes in contact with him is transformed. And the transformation, it's like a caterpillar which transforms into a butterfly. Prabhupada said that the caterpillar is actually thinking of becoming a butterfly. And so the transformation takes place. So if we can talk to people in such a way that they begin to think of becoming a devotee of Krishna, then we have acted as a touchstone and they become transformed. And the more you can do that, of course the prime example is Srila Prabhupada himself, who took, and I heard him say this when I was getting my second initiation in London. He said, I have taken cats and dogs and turned them into Paramahamsas. And that's touchstone, that's acting like a touchstone. You take something that is, it's like the process of alchemy. It would take bell metal and it turns into gold by adding some chemical. So it's the association of the devotee acting as the touchstone that causes the transformation of bell metal into gold. That's how it works. It's not really a chemical process.
The Maharaj was saying that when a devotee, he should not feel himself like a super devotee because he's on samkhya. When he comes back to the temple, he should not, you know, want to be appreciated or, you know, want to get respect. So that's the case maybe for himself. But it is true that samkhya devotees, they do a very tough job. And it's not nice to see that if they don't get enough appreciation from the temple authorities or from the temple devotees. So how should you go around with that?
Well, the example was Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, that if a brahmachari would go out and sell even one magazine for one paisa or one penny, that he would bestow his blessings, he would appreciate that, and publicly he would show his appreciation for his brahmachari who sold one paper for one paisa. And the appreciation should always be there. We should always show appreciation for each other's service. And it may have to come from you first, showing appreciation to the temple devotees, saying, oh, the temple is so clean, and the devotees are so bright-faced here, the prasadam is so wonderful, and the deities look so gorgeous. and you appreciate that service, and they say, oh, the second time devotee is doing such wonderful service. You really, it may just be below the surface. You may have to bring it out by offering appreciation first. And that's reciprocation. That's a loving exchange between the devotees. So if you feel that that's lacking, then you take the first step, and then they'll take the step. Reciprocation. But it's true that the appreciation that is shown to us is actually coming from Krishna. That Krishna wants us to be inspired by that reciprocation. So he will get devotees to say, oh, to recognize the service that you're doing, to give you some recognition and appreciation. Because Krishna wants this book distribution to continue and to increase. He probably used to say double it every year. We used to wear buttons. 1 + 1 = 2. Double it. And our idea, Prabhupada wanted us to double book distribution every year. And he said, if you can't double it, at least maintain a certain level. If we didn't maintain, Prabhupada would say, oh, you're degraded. But he wanted us to maintain a certain standard and increase, if at all possible, increase the number of devotees, increase the publication, increase the number of languages, and everything ever increasing. That's why Anandam Bhurivardhanam Pradipadam Purnam Nitasvana, the ever increasing ocean of bliss, means devotional service ever increasing. Just like when you walk into the ocean, the water level keeps rising higher, higher, higher. And there's no limit. You keep walking into the miles high before you stop. And that's what Krishna consciousness is, ever expanding, ever increasing ocean of bliss. And the reason why it becomes blissful, just like we saw in the program we've had here the last couple of days, is when the devotees come together and they show appreciation for each other's service. Even if they did that service 20 years ago or 30 years ago, yeah, still appreciate it today. Because, and I'll tell you why, because the benefit of that service has not been lost. Whatever service you do for Krishna, the benefit is eternal. So like if you do 1% in this lifetime, next lifetime you're starting at 2%. It's never lost. So that means that that service is still being appreciated. So even if that devotee has real long hair now, or he forgets the words of the song, or whatever it is, we know that that man did great service. And the benefit is not lost, and we're benefiting from the service he did. So we should show that appreciation. Let us show it first, and then he'll say, but you're the great devotees of today. You're the ones distributing all this literature and bringing people to the temple and taking people on guided tours and distributing the books, and you've built up this project. So it's reciprocal. Just like with Krishna, with Krishna's devotees, the dati prati gunanati guyamakati prichati bhunte bojayate. His reciprocation is loving exchange. So Krishna is not alone. Krishna is with his devotees. So you want to have loving exchange with Krishna? Have it with his devotees too. Because Krishna is concerned. It's not impersonal. Where there's only Krishna and nobody else. Because Krishna is surrounded by all of his devotees, always. When he comes into this world, he comes with an entourage. He doesn't come by himself. So Prabhupada said that we're concerned, just like a man, he said, is concerned for his hat, and he's also concerned about his shoes. So in the same way, we're concerned about offering our service to Krishna, offering our love to Krishna, but we also want to have reciprocation with Krishna's devotees, because Krishna is not alone. So I think that's what, you know, it may have to start with you, because you're the one who sees it. So you would say, the deities are so beautifully dressed, I really appreciate your service. And then someone who dressed the deities say, but look at the service you're doing, it's so wonderful. And not that it becomes a mutual admiration society, but, you know, we're all glorifying each other, and, you know, we're all living in a little bubble, and nobody else exists except us, unless they want to glorify us too. But we should show that appreciation, because that means that we are, we have some confidential connection. We're connected through Krishna. Just like Prabhupada said, if if a man marries a woman, then all of her relatives are considered loved ones because of their relationship with her. He said, similarly, we see everyone's relationship with Krishna, so they all become, everyone who has a relationship with Krishna becomes a loved one. They're in the family. So this is the family of devotees. These are all descendants of Srila Prabhupada, initiated by disciples of Prabhupada. And it's ISKCON. It's the greater ISKCON society of devotees. And we should all be appreciating each other's service. Because we want everybody to stay in the family. Mm-hmm. And we don't want anybody to leave. Prabhupada said even the loss of one devotee is a tragedy. Mm-hmm. So that appreciation will help people stay mm-hmm. within the movement. Because you know, everybody really needs a little recognition. And though it's interesting, those who don't, they are given so much recognition. But we should not forget those who are, you know, the devotee who is cleaning, sweeping the stairs, or serving the prasadam, and cleaning the chandeliers, or whatever it is, taking the garbage out on a tractor, mm-hmm. whatever service, we should recognize that. And we should invite those devotees to come on Sankirtan from time to time. Like I was asking tell a person, I said, you going to come to the meeting? And he said, no, I don't have experience doing Sankirtan. It would be false if I were to preach to these men about it. I said, no, they want you to come and talk, because even if you're simply repeating what Prabhupada said, and whatever realization you have, and I said, but you have to watch out, because they're going to ask you to come out with them, so you'll have more experience in Sankirtan. He said, yes, that's what I'm afraid of. But Prabhupada said everyone should learn the art of selling the book. Every devotee should know that. And he also said it's the safest place in the material world to be on Sankirtan. He said it is the most valuable service to manage a Sankirtan party. So I don't know who the leader is. You all look like leaders to me. You're the leader of Sankirtan. So it's the most valuable service to manage a Sankirtan party. I'll find the exact quote. There's a word I'm missing, but it's like the finest service, or the most glorious service to manage to take out the party. In fact, it was Jayananda. I'm sure you've heard of Jayananda Prabhu. Mm-hmm. He was the president of the temple in San Francisco, and he said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I want to drive the Sankirtan party from place to place, and I think that would be more valuable service than me being here as temple president. And Prabhupada approved. Okay, be the driver of the Sankirtan party. So, because he realized that serving the men who are doing Sankirtan is very, very valuable. It makes you dear to Krishna. You become dear to Krishna just by serving those who do Sankirtan. And the temple president, he will instruct the other temple devotees in that regard. He will say, take care of these men. These are jewels within the society. Sankirtan devotees. They're like very valuable jewels. Well, not to worry that not enough appreciation is being shown. It'll come. Sometimes devotees are just not aware. They may not be thinking of what it's like to go out for a week and sleep in a van and do a sankirtan for 8 hours a day and carry a bag full of 20 or 30 pounds of books. Because that's tough. That was really tough. So then they may not be thinking about it. So your presence reminds them. That's why it's important for the Sankirtan party to come to the temple. But the devotees, it's like Mahavidyam Rigapati, they came every week. And we always had Maha Prashan for them. They led the kirtans, they did the shtagostis, they gave the class, they preached to the guests, they did everything. Because we honored them like that. So it may take a little time to develop. We got a lot of young devotees here, so they may not be aware. But you have a nice young devotee who's a bhakta leader, and talking to him, I suggested that he should be hoping to train men who can join the Saketan traveling book distribution party. We did that in France, and Jim DeMarge and myself were in charge of the New Devotee program. And we always had like about 25 men that we were training at the same time. That's right, 25 men. And every month, we sent two new men to do full-time book distribution throughout the year. So at the point where I left France, there were 75 full-time book distributors in France. Our collections were $100,000 a week. That's just like euros, 100,000 euros a week.
You know how many devotees there are going out now in France?
I don't know, maybe three.
Yeah.
Not that many? I don't know.
No.
Not? Well, they must be...
What, I met one guy who was going out a few times, but he was beaten up too much by Muslims, so he didn't go anywhere.
Well, we had problems in New York City, too, when the World Trade Center was destroyed.
Yeah.
And people were telling us, don't go out because you look too much like Osama bin Laden with your dhotis and everything.
Uh-huh.
And I said, we don't care who we look like. We're going out. We're going out in Hainan. And we went out like about 4 or 5 days later. And we kept going, and we kept going, and we did what we've always done. And people were appreciating like anything. They were so appreciative. And we were chanting the holy name, and everybody else is morose, and you know, really bringing a little joy to people.
Yeah.
It was back in 1972, it was the last story, and then he got Prashan now. In 1972, I was taking out a Hainan party in New York, and we went to a real rough part of the city, which is called Harlem. I don't know if you ever heard of Harlem.
Yeah.
Harlem was a rough place, man. And we had one boy with us. He had long hair. He'd just come from India, and he came with us on Hainan. And then somebody came up to our party and said to me, "You can't chant here. This is my block. I'm in charge of the street. Get lost. This is my place, my turf." And he said, "You don't have my permission." I said, "We got permission from Lord Chaitanya. We can chant any street in the city." He said, "Oh, in that case, go right ahead." So the obstacle was lifted. And later on, this devotee told me years later, he said, "I was so mad at you for dealing with that man like that, because you were risk. I felt my life was at stake. It was on the line. In fact, could have killed us." And I said, "No, we just, I knew that he would just back off, because you know, this happens in New York." And that devotee, he's supposed to come here today, or tomorrow. He's coming here tomorrow, Ratnath Swami. That's right. He had just come from Vrindavan. He had been at Radhakund, and he couldn't stay in the country, so they said, "If you can't stay in Vrindavan, go to New Vrindavan." So he was on his way to New Vrindavan, stopped in New York, came out of Harinam 30 years ago. And then this happened, this incident.
He tells this story too.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
Did he tell you he was mad at me?
No, but he told me this guy was about as big as a city block.
That's an obstacle. Another guy, we were doing Harinam on Broadway and 45th Street. And some guy came up to me, and he starts pushing me, saying, "You don't have a permit. I didn't give you my approval to chant here. Get out of here." And I was backpedaling and trying to leave the kirtan at the same time. He was pushing me. And then I hear the sound. It was a policeman on horseback. And he saw this guy pushing me around. He came up, grabbed the guy by the collar, and he took off down the street. And this guy was running alongside of his horse. So the obstacle was removed.
All right. I have one more question.
Yeah.
It's
like, is it all right? One more?
Yeah, more.
Yeah.
So, I was just saying that these people that are walking by on the Sankirtan, all of them have potential to become special devotees. And you see, all it takes is like a little effort. Right? I think it can take a little effort, or it may take a lot of effort. So I'd like you to maybe speak about like how much endeavor it takes like to make someone a devotee. Because all these men are going out and contacting the conditioned souls. with the aim not only to give them a book, but also to make them devotees.
Ah.
You know, and how to make them a devotee, and what Prabhupada said, meant when he said, you know, gallons of blood, you know, to make someone a devotee. And,
yeah.
And what we have to go through. You know, it
may not happen overnight. Like that story I was telling about Akiladhara, who couldn't leave the temple because he had eaten so much prasadam. But he had no choice. He had to become a devotee. But and just to complete that story about Akiladhara, that he was such a prasadam addict, but he was also absorbed in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, that every Sunday feast, he would eat all of his feast was he would eat the remnants on the plates of all the guests. And we would never feel away from John because he was there. He was like a vacuum. That was his feast. You know, in New York Temple also, we had a bag which was called the Merge. You ever hear of that?
Yeah.
The Merge. That all the guest plates were put, they were scraped off into this big bag on Sunday. And then it was served out to the devotees on Monday.
Oh.
Yeah. So you had half-eaten poi, half-eaten gulab jamun, and all rice mixed with challah. That's terrible, yeah, rice mixed in the whole. So nothing was ever wasted, because, I'll tell you why, because in Paris we got a letter from Prabhupada. We had this problem. What are we going to do with the prasadam left on the place of the guests? And Prabhupada said, prasadam never goes bad. He said, it's all a question of faith. So we never threw away prasadam after that. And once Ayurvalas, he made a pot of dal, which was enough for several days. So after the third day, it started going sour. And he said, everybody drink at least one cup, you know, just hold your nose and drink it. So we did that. But as on the fifth day, you know, it's down to like this much dal, he wouldn't throw it away, you know. So he said, I know what to do, I'm going to market. So he came back with all his lettuce, and he said, you dip the lettuce in the dal and you eat it. And we're just going to finish it. So we did that for another day. And it was the sixth day. We said, we're not doing this anymore. So he buried it in the garden. But it was all a question of faith. Yes. So how do you make people... You really can't make people. It's a voluntary thing. You can't make them, but you can entice them, you can attract them, you can convince them, but you can't make them do something that they're not willing to do. It's voluntary. Devotional service is always voluntary, and ultimately it's based on love for Krishna. You want to serve Krishna because you have love of Krishna. But what you can do is you can always provide a favorable opportunity for someone to take a step closer. And the Prabhupada said that every time you distribute a magazine or a book, you're taking one step closer to going back to Godhead. And for every step you take, Krishna takes 1,000 steps towards you. So he must be pretty far away. But so what to speak of these people that we're meeting, if we can give them a piece of literature and they can give some donation, then Prabhupada said that Lord Chaitanya is incarnating when that transaction takes place. So that's what we want. We want Lord Chaitanya to be in the center of this interaction. And let him do the convincing. You know, Krishna is present in everyone's heart as super soul. So Krishna knows, I desire this person to become a devotee, just like I'm a devotee. I'd like this person to become a devotee. I'd like to have his association on the transcendental platform. So Krishna, as super soul, is in his heart, and he will reciprocate. He will encourage this person. I want you to take that book. Take that book. This devotee is so sincere. I want you to have that book, and this book will tell you about me. So the person is convinced by Krishna from within to take the book, and that's the transcendental reciprocation with Krishna in the center. Mm-hmm. So it's not that we're doing it. It's like Maharaj keeps saying, he's told me 10 times already since I came here, you're not the doer. You know, we're not the doer. He said that in class this morning again. And trying to convince us that we're not the controller of the outcome of the situation, but we are an instrument. So that's what we're doing. We're acting as an instrument, and we're giving everyone this opportunity. Each opportunity is like a favorable breeze.
and the breeze pushes the sailboat in a certain direction. So everyone should be moving in the direction of Krishna's lotus feet. That's what we want to say.
I have one question. I was last week I was in Utrecht in Holland, and I was showing one new student how just to do the book. And then at a certain point one boy came, and I was thinking, ah, he's not gonna take the book, but amazingly he took the book. And then we started going in, and then came a couple, and they came, and they were, I gave them the book, and they were quite interested.